Well, and we've only, today is our wedding anniversary.
Hey. Yeah.
Yep, 49 years and 3 days.
Hey.
So, it is, that's an anniversary, isn't it? 49 years and 3 days. That's our anniversary. So,
we got 52 tomorrow.
And counting.
And counting. Well, for some of us, it's time to start something new. And I think we heard some of this from Chris. Now, you might think to yourself, do you ever talk to yourself? You might talk to yourself and say, self. There's no need to start anything new. You know, I've been living around this life for a while. And it's all, you know, I got my habits, I got my things, you know, I know. This whole new life thing, no. Well, just think about what happened to Elizabeth and Zachariah. That was something new for sure, out of the blue. I'm not saying anybody here is going to get pregnant, but maybe, just maybe, God has something new. Have you ever recently started anything new? Has anybody started anything new? What is it, Chuck?
Well, you could just about say I've started my whole life, maybe. My wife passed away 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I mentioned that. I've moved over here. I've gotten a better relationship with my son and daughter,
mm-hmm.
my grandkids, and also just recently, 5 cousins that I haven't seen since I've been about 19, 20 years old. We all got back in touch with each other.
Oh, isn't that terrific?
It's
good. Something new. And Dan, you said something new?
Voice coded.
I'm sorry?
Voice coded.
Wow. Who is he?
Henry Moore.
Henry Moore. Okay. Morse code. Okay. Donna?
Well, I was just going to say, when I started my family, I had 4 children and a new husband to get used to and everything. My whole life has changed drastically.
Mm-hmm. Well, and sometimes we think of something new as exciting. But sometimes we think of something new as scary, is that there's this ramp up that we know it's coming and you sort of look over the edge and it's coming and all of a sudden life pauses and all you can see is the bottom has dropped out and then things start moving rapidly, that it's a time for newness. And if you've been following The Chosen, in the first season, we have Mary Magdala, who was possessed, and Jesus heals her and drives the demons out. She has a completely new life, and she starts to try to reconnect with her relationship with God. And in that culture, in that time, they had, on Saturdays, they had a Seder meal or Shabbat, and it was and she tries now to restart that tradition in her life, and it's uncomfortable and new.
Can I read it for you, Mary?
Stop it, Barnaby. I read better than you. My father taught me.
Very impressive.
Is the first round.
Yes, let's eat. Like I said, you are very popular.
Or it's a Pharisee here to shut us down for letting you be here.
Hello, Mary.
Hello.
It's good to see you.
Yes. Yes.
Rude, but would it be okay if I...
Oh, yes, of course. Please come in. I just never thought you'd know. I have guests here. This is my first time. I don't know what I'm doing.
Rabbi.
You already know these men?
They are students of mine. I trust they have been polite.
Of course. Your guests can take the seat. Yes, Mary? Oh, of course. Yes, of course. Please have a seat. I keep saying it first a lot. Friends. friends assist the man I told you about who helped me.
Oh, yes, yeah, Mary told us so much about you.
Oh, I hope not too much.
I'm Barnaby, this is Shula. She is blind.
Ah.
In case you couldn't tell.
I'm so sorry, I don't actually know your name.
I'm Jesus of Nazareth.
Well, apparently something good can come from Nazareth.
Mary, I'm honored to be here. Why don't you begin?
Oh, no, I couldn't now that you're here. You must.
Thank you, but this is your home, and I would love for you to do it.
She's just so nervous. Think about the first time you started something new. You tried something new. I was so nervous trying to make a caramel pie. Now, I know how to make pies. I know how to make the dough, and I know how to make the apple pie and the cherry pie and the blueberry pie, but a caramel pie? That's hard. I've never done it. You got to put sugar in a pan and heat it, just sugar, and the sugar begins to melt, and it turns brown. And in an instant, it'll turn black, and then that's no good. That's not good eats. So it's like, I'm really, you know, is it right? Is it the time? I'm watching, I'm timing it, I'm doing all this stuff, I'm running around. And I start to shake the pan, make it get, I'm like, oh, is it right? Is it wrong? And then you gotta pour cream into it when it's the right color. And I poured the cream into it, and I knew it was gonna bubble up. And it bubbled up, and it bubbled up, and it bubbled up, and it bubbled over the pan, onto the stove, and, you know, all over the place. You know, I had to clean that up. When we start something new, there can be this feeling of what? Fear, insecurity. I'm going to do it wrong. Isn't that what Mary kept thinking? She was looking, she had cheat sheets on how to do this. When it comes time to do something new, to start a new path, to start a new time of life, we can feel those things. And we see this in the life of Joseph. Remember last week, Joseph is the prime minister. They've had 7 years of great crops. They've been storing it away. And now 7 years of famine have started. And his brothers were sent by their father, Jacob, and they fall down before Joseph. Joseph knows exactly who they are. They haven't got a clue. They haven't got a clue. And remember what Joseph says to them? What does he accuse them of? He says, you are spies, which is, what do you do with spies? You take them out and you shoot them. Right? You lop their heads off. You torture them. So being called a spy, you know, isn't like me. You know, I was Polish and Italian. It wasn't like, you know, somebody saying a Polack joke to me, which I've got thousands of. But, you know, you're a spy, which means you ain't got long to live, baby. And their response is they deny it. They say, no, my Lord, they answered. Your servants have come to buy food. We are the sons of one man, your servant. We are, your servants are what kind of men? How do you think Joseph reacted to that? Remember what they did to him? And they now say they're what? What's an honest man like? What's an honest person like? You can trust. They're consistent, right? We're not going to lie to you. We lied to our dad. We lied to Jacob saying, well, we don't know where Joseph is, but here's this bloody coat. Literally had blood on it. We're honest men. We are not spies. And Joseph just says, no. You have come to see our land, where our land is unprotected, where it's weak. You want to come and exploit us. But they said, your servants, and here's another one. We're 12 brothers, the sons of one man who lives in the land of Canaan. The youngest is with our father, and what?
One is
no more. And Joseph is sitting saying, you want to bet? You think that's what's going on in his mind? He doesn't say anything.
Yep.
But he says, you're saying, oh, one is no more. Have I got a secret for you? I could be on that show. I've got a secret. You know, I'm the one. And none of you are old enough to remember that. So let's move on. So Joseph said, it is just as I told you, you are spies. And this is how you're going to be what?
Tested.
What does it mean to be tested?
Uh-oh.
Uh-oh. What does it mean to be tested? To prove one way or the other. To reveal who they really are. Some of us went to school and some of us took tests. Were any of you here good test takers?
No.
I wasn't. But I was very consistent in my grades. I got D minuses all through school in both spelling and Spanish. You got fines and dandies?
Yep.
Fines and dandies.
Well, these guys are going to be tested. And how is the test going to be? He says, you will not leave until the younger brother comes. Uh-oh. That's really bad news because I really don't believe you. And so here's the test. Listen to this test. Send how many of you? No, it says send how many?
One.
This is the test. Send one back. There's 10 of you, so 9 of you are going to stay. And we're going to say send one of you back and bring the other brother. And that's going to be the test to see whether you're telling the truth. Because I really think you're spies. Like James Bond. You're spies. You're really, nobody knows what's going on with James Bond. He's always hiding something. And that's what a spy does. They hide. And so the test that Joseph comes up with is, all of you are going to stay, but you're going to pick one who's going to go back. And so he puts them where? In jail. It puts them in prison. Anybody ever been in prison? I have. You go to prison and you got all sorts of time to think, don't you?
Yeah.
You got time to think. And they're there for 3 days. And finally, he brings them back out after 3 days. And Joseph says, do this and you will live. Why? Joseph says, I fear God. So remember, if you're on, now he changes the plan. He says, before it was send one back, right? Now the plan is, let one of you stay here and the other 9 go back. See how he changes it? Makes it, I think, easier. Go and take grain back to your starving households. Go. Feed your families, and only one of these guys have to stay back. You see, this is a real change to their life. It's a real change to what's going on. And at this point, they come to this fork in the road. You know, this change. You know, the change is good news, isn't it? Before it was only one gets to go back. Now 9 get to go back, and only one. How do you pick the one to stay? I always wondered that. I'm sorry?
Draw straws.
Maybe they did rock, paper, scissors. I don't know. But there's also bad news. Whenever there's a change, there's going to be bad news. There's going to be things that don't work the way they should or the way you expect them. And that's what's going on with the brothers right now. And so you must bring your younger brother to me. This is Joseph speaking. So your words can be verified. I want to check up, and you may not die. So this is the test. One of you are going to go, one is going to stay, and other nine are going to go back, take grain, and then bring the younger brother. And here is something I have never seen. I've been reading my Bible pretty seriously for a long, 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 long time. I have never seen this before. You think, okay, there it is. It's the test is now, right? This they proceeded to do. Starting from that moment, they made choices to do this, to follow what Joseph had laid out as the test, and they decided, okay, this is the only way out, we're going to do it. They proceeded to do it. They started the plan. They started this new path. They started doing something new. And it was scary. It was scary for them. Who's going to stay here? You know, what's going to happen? What's Dad going to say about bringing Benjamin down? He's not going to like that at all. So there's something new. They start. And, you know, it's really taking that first step can be scary, can't it? It really can. Martin Luther King put it this way. He said, take the first step in faith. You don't have to see the whole staircase. Just take the first step. I think those are wise words. You know, when God says to do something, there's that first step. God speaks to Zechariah, and there's that first step, which he stumbled over really badly. Now, I know nobody here, including me, has ever stumbled over when God said to do something new. But you got to take that first step. Steve Jobs, who was the leader of Apple, put it this way. You cannot connect dots looking forward. You can only connect them by looking backwards. This approach has never let me down, and it has made all the difference in my life. You look backwards. You look at where we've come from. The brothers were doing that, right? They looked back. They thought about how they had Joseph kidnapped and then sold him into slavery. They looked back at their lives, and like Chris said, there's that shame. And they said to one another, what? Surely we are being punished because of our brother. That's the first thought that came out of their head, the first words that came out of our mouth. We saw how, what? Distressed he was when he pleaded with us for his life. But we wouldn't listen to him. That's why, what? This distress. What is distress? Problems? It's real big problems. But I want to give you a picture to sort of understand what distress means. Distress is like this ship, okay? This is the canal in Corinth. And it's, let me look here so I can get the, you know, it's 80 feet wide. Modern ships can't go through it. Maybe, you know, they can't go through it. It's really mainly for fishing boats and tourists. But when this ship went through and is being towed, how many options does this boat have? None. You get stuck. Oh, if you go off course, what's going to happen? You're going to run into a wall of rock. This is a picture of distress. There's no way out. There's no way of turning around. There's no way changing course. When you're in distress, you've just got to go through it. That's what they were saying about Joseph. He was in distress. He saw no way out, and they wouldn't listen to him. And now the brothers are in distress, right? Do they have any way out? No. They can't call in, you know, like a Monopoly. You can't roll, you know, pick up a community chess card and, you know, go pass go and go collect $200. There's no way through it. There's no way except through it, I should say. So when it comes to distress and moving forward, they had to go forward. There was no other option. And maybe, how do we go forward? Maybe you're at that point saying, I need to move forward. And moving forward, first of all, you got to admit where you're at. You got to admit that you're hemmed in, that there's no way out. It just seems like nothing is going to change. And then you also have to understand your need. The need that says, you know, their need was, we got to get food back to our families. And now they have this other need. We're going to leave a brother here and we got to bring Benjamin down. And then they came up with the solution. The solution was, is they picked one brother, Simeon, who stayed, and the others went back with the food. And then next, there was a plan. They had a plan. The plan was, I got to go back, and we got to talk to Dad. And can you imagine the conversation along the journey? Well, who's going to bring it up? What are we going to say? How is that going to work? And then you take that step. You take that step of faith. If all we do is stand still, nothing changes. God is wanting you and I to take that next step of faith. But it's not always easy, is it? And you know how I know? Because of Ronnie Howard. Remember Ronnie Howard? Remember Ronnie Howard? He was 5 years old when he started appearing on what TV show?
Andy Griffith.
He was 5 years old, and he was so cute. And during that time, he was also in the movie Music Man. He was, you know, he was an actor, but, you know, he was a kid. But when he turned 19, he was offered the lead role in Happy Days. This is a big deal. He's 19. He's got the lead part in a prime time television show. This is huge. Now, he was offered the part, but he had finished high school and was actually in film school, you know, because his goal all along was to make his own movies. Not just to be an actor, but he wanted to make movies. But he saw this opportunity, a great opportunity, right? You know, get paid a lot of money, not just for the show, but personal appearances and reruns. They get paid for reruns. You know, and this happened. And he was on for 7 years. But during that time, something happened. Listen to him recall it.
The Richie Cunningham character was an undeniable lead of the show. And I actually left film school because I already had the dream of being a filmmaker to be in the show, because I just felt like, well, this is a great opportunity. It's a great job. I've got to do it. Now, Henry, from the very first episode, Henry Winkler playing the Fonz, just with a few lines, just had this remarkable character. Now, it was amazing to be around it. And we immediately bonded and became great friends. We were a fantastic ensemble. We all got along great. But slowly but surely, as they started to write for him, and I mean, it became like sort of like Beatlemania for a while. I mean, when we would go out on the road to promote the show, it was just insane. Focused on Fonzie, clearly that was very exciting. Except the executives, studio heads, network heads, they started really treating me with a lot of disrespect from a business standpoint, just in terms of interaction, and the press kept saying, what's it like, or do you feel, you know, like you become a second-class citizen on your own show, and these kinds of things, which I didn't feel within the workspace, and I certainly didn't feel it within our our friendship, which endures to this day. I mean, he's the godfather of all four of my kids.
Yeah.
Bryce has been on the show.
Yeah.
That's Bryce's godfather right there.
Yeah.
But it was a test, and more than anything, it did two things. First, I'd been in this rarefied world as this kind of kid actor who was a star. I did recognize this is a business, and it's a tough business, and it's a competitive one, and you have to understand it from all perspectives. And more than anything, it reminded me that I needed to, even though I was on the show, I had a responsibility to the show, what I really owed it to myself was to pursue my real dream, which was to be in charge of my own productions, the stories I wanted to tell, and be the filmmaker. And I'm not sure I would have taken that initiative to the level I needed to finally get to do it.
To walk away from the lead role of primetime television is a hard thing. There's all the adulation, there's all the, you know, glory, there's all of this. There's the money. There's lots of money. But there was something that said I needed to go and do something different. And that took, did you hear what he said? It was a test. And he heard the test and passed the test. And you say, how do you know he passed the test? Well, as I said earlier, he was on the show for 7 years. And then he left. And the show went on for four more years. I don't know if you knew that. It went on for four more years. And, you know, they stayed friends. And as he said, Henry Winkler is the godfather of his four children. They, you know, it's a marvelous relationship. It didn't break their friendship. But he went down a different path. He went back to directing school and started producing and directing movies. He has made 28 feature films that have been nominated for 41 Academy Awards, and they have won 9. Henry Winkler, great guy. You know, this was not Henry's making, right? They started to write for him, and he became more popular. Henry Winkler stayed on the show and has had a very nice career. Henry Winkler is worth about $35 million today. Not too shabby, right? He was probably not standing in line for food stamps anywhere, right? Not that money is the measure of all things, but Ron Howard is worth more than $200 million. You see? He followed his dream. What God had called him to, had wired him for, but it was a tough choice, right? Leaving success and being comfortable. I mean, did you hear what he said about the people in the cast? They were all friends. I don't know if you knew this. They would go out and play softball together. They would play softball against teams to raise money for charities and things like this. They were friends, you know, on the stage, off stage. You know, they built this family. And to walk away from that and that success for the unknown, uncertainty. He's a brave guy. And maybe, just maybe, that's what God is calling some of us to be. To walk down that other path. Robert Frost put it like this. He said, I shall be telling this with a sigh somewhere ages and ages hence. Two roads diverged in a wood, and I took the one less traveled, and it has made all the difference. Change. God wants us to be like Jesus, and that's change, the biggest change of all. And why do we want to be like Jesus? So we can go to God with our checklist, say, hey, God, look at this. Look at me. Check, check. I got all the boxes checked. No, he says, because of who you are and how your love for me, I want to love you back. I want to love you back, and I'll do anything to please you. That is the road less traveled. That really is. Or, you know, to change into a life of gratitude. not a life of grumbling, but gratitude. It changes everything. An appreciation for all that we have. Didn't say it was easy. I didn't say life was perfect. But to have a life of being grateful. And you know, I know we have pain. I know that. I've got pain. We all got pain. But, you know, David wrote in the Psalms, he says, what? Weeping may stay for the night, but joy comes in the morning. Read the book of Job. What happens to Job? He gets crushed twice. And he complains. He does. He complains. But at the end, he's grateful. Now, when it comes to mourning and crying in the night, there are no rules, okay? There is no timetable. There is no checklist. Everybody grieves differently. We do. But if all you do is grieve, you're going to be one unhappy person. You've got to come to the point where joy comes in the morning. Joy comes in the morning. And many times that joy comes in and through community with other people. Yeah, you can be joyful in yourself, by yourself, but it's so much easier when it's with other people. It really is. And you have this community, and it can change everything. I'm going to give a couple examples. I am not a history buff, but I am interested because of the stories. Remember, in the United States, we had a time when we were fighting against ourselves, right? And I'm not talking about the last election, okay? It was called what? The Civil War. Some people call it the War of Northern Aggression, but that's a different story. Remember, it lasted for 4 years, right? And at the end, at Appomattox Courthouse in Virginia, Robert E. Lee came to surrender to Ulysses S. Grant. And this, just listen to the numbers. There were 1.5 million casualties, which and part of that was about 620,000 deaths. So there's like another 620,000 of people who were injured or lost or whatever. You know, there was a lot of hate. There was a lot of bitterness. And Lee comes to surrender. And when Grant comes in, he doesn't say, get on your knees. I mean, you know. We beat you, so, you know, grovel. He didn't do that. He was very cautious and quiet. He didn't pursue it. They just started talking for a little bit. And then he waited for Lee to bring up the surrender, rather than say, okay, we're here, let's get it done, get out of here. No. And then after the surrender terms were given, and they were very, very, very generous. Grant says, about how big is your army? He says, I really have no idea. I said, do your soldiers need anything? And he says, oh, we haven't eaten for a long time. Immediately, Grant says, we will send over 25,000 rations. That's food for a day. Didn't ask for a receipt, didn't say, oh, we'll give this to you, but you got to give us more. No, that was it. Yes? I would not care to comment. So Lee leaves, and as Lee is leaving the courthouse, this is an Appomattox courthouse, he's coming down the steps. some of the northern soldiers, and understandably, start cheering, you know, the war is over, we beat the enemy. Grant says, stop it. Shuts it down. He says, they are our countrymen once again. A little bit later, we have here, as the 3 days later was the official surrender, and the guy on the left is General John B. Gordon, and he was leading all the soldiers who were marching in. The Southerners were coming in, and they were going to surrender their arms, you know, their guns. And he's on a horse. He's on his horse, and Gordon is down. You know, they're exhausted, they're defeated. You can just imagine his. You know, he's just crushed. And as he does come up, this is Joshua Lawrence Chamberlain, who had been wounded seven times, or six times, in battle. And he now is, you know, a big guy in the military. He sees Gordon coming in like this. And what does he do? He calls for all of the northern soldiers to come to attention as a sign of respect and to honor them. Gordon maneuvers his horse, and he and the horse bow. And he takes his sword and touches it to his toe, which is a sign of depth of respect. And they did that for the rest, as the rest of the thousands of came in, they saluted them. One more story. This is my favorite guy in the war. His name is Elisha Hunt Rhodes. He's from Rhode Island. He joined when he was just a teenager. He has now risen up in the ranks. And he's from the Rhode Island 2nd, you see. And so, as you know, they're just joyous. And he has this beautiful diary about how excited and thankful they are. But when they see the Confederates come up, what does he say? The rebels are half starved, and our men have divided their rations with them. These are the guys they were just shooting at a few days ago. And now they're going to feed them? The 2nd Rhode Island had 3 days' rations. And after dividing the rations with the rebels, we'll have to make a day and a half's rations last for three. But we did it how? Cheerfully. They were willing to choose to forgive, to move on, to do something new. They were willing to forgive. They were willing to move on. They were willing to start again. And this is a great time. We have this new season of Christmas, right? Today is the beginning of Advent. This is a great time to begin anew, to begin reaching out to people, to begin being kind. Why? Not just because we're nice people, but because of who God is and what he has done for us in Jesus. That empowers us and changes us. So it's time to start something new. My prayer is God's going to tell you what to do. It's not up to me, it's up to him. That we could all start something new. And we do it because of who God is and what he has done. Let me pray. Our Father and our God, I thank you that you did something new, that Jesus left the throne of heaven. That was certainly the biggest new thing that ever happened. And he came to die and bring us back to you. And we're so grateful. God, make us into the new people you want, and that we would be cooperative with you. In Jesus' name, amen.